Welcome to the worst nightmare of all. Reality.
Explore the lesser-known stories of our unknown world. Join the pursuit of the paranormal with Ash and Greg.
Good evening, Ash. How are you doing?
Evening, Greg. I'm very good, very excited about tonight. How are you?
Yes, I'm excited too. I'm in the presence of some celebrities tonight, which we'll come on to shortly. But yeah, how's things going? The weather's awesome. Cooler.
Awesome. Been hot today.
It has been hot today. Bank holiday Monday.
Yeah, getting very hot again.
Yeah, it is. But yeah, lots of things have been happening recently in the UFO world. Not so much in a paranormal field. So I've been delving into the UFO Twitter and...
I know, I've been seeing it. I've been
that murky world.
Yeah.
It's a bit toxic at times.
That's why I'm not there very often.
Yeah, I dip in and out.
It's
good to get guests on. It's good to get guests on from, so we go with it. So tonight, Ash, we are joined by Abs, Steve, and Nat from UFO Identified, which is the team you belong to, Ash, as well.
Yep, it is. Correct. And so you are with all of us tonight.
Yes, I'm in the presence of greatness. So, but to be fair, that was a good article. So for everybody that doesn't know, in the Daily Mail this weekend, specifically Sunday, there was an article with you guys. I won't steal your thunder. I'll let you guys talk about it.
So, we've been in the paper this weekend, which is really, really great. And for once, it was a really positive UFO story, which is great as well.
Yeah.
So, a big change with that. So basically, the article was to do with us females in the UFO field, and Abs. Our Abigail from UFO Identified was one of the female UFO researchers who was interviewed as part of that. So the article also featured one of our friends from the CE5 group that we do a lot of research and a lot of investigations with, Holly. So that was great to see her perspective. So we've had the CE5 perspective, which is more the consciousness, and our Abs, who was more sort of the research and investigation side of it. But the title of the article was "People Think We Wear Tinfoil Hats and Bark at the Moon," which I thought was fabulous. And it was basically an article around that to say, well, actually, us females who were involved in ufology actually are quite normal for the most part.
All right, say that again with a straight face.
Yeah, well, it's like you say, Nat, it was a very positive article.
Indeed. We were pleasantly surprised.
Yeah,
I think
definitely. I saw
both
it.
Abs and Holly were a little bit worried.
Concerned.
About how the tone would go. Yeah. So, yeah, we were really pleased with it. And we've had loads and loads of people contact us, you know, because our pictures were all in there, and there was pictures of the CE5 meditation group and things. So, yeah, it's done a lot to raise the profile for not just the women in ufology, but for the greater ufology following. So that's always a positive thing.
Definitely.
Yeah, so Abs, obviously you were part of that article. Is it important that more women take part in this?
I think there is a lot of women that take part, they just don't talk about it for fear of ridicule more than anything else.
Totally.
Because there's always, like, it's always a good mix when we do a Skywatch. The CE5, and as Holly says, there's always a good mix with that. It's not dominated by males. It's just that you don't hear enough from them.
Why do you think that is, though? Because the paranormal, so just flipping it slightly, there's a lot more women involved in that, for definite, than there are in the UFO field.
Well, it's not just the tinfoil hat stuff. It's a lot of them have kids, and you don't want your kids getting ridiculed if your name is out there for it. When the kids are going to school and stuff, and they're getting ridiculed for it because of what your mum does. And again, it's with jobs. Sometimes in the workplace, it's tricky enough being a female, but then this stuff comes out and then you're seen as fringe.
So do you think, though, that that's been changing over the last few years? People are not so...
Not over the last few years. I would say over the last year.
Yeah. Okay.
It's just been the last year since the Americans come out with it. It seems to have opened the door.
Just to counteract that, Greg, I think the ridicule is very much still there. Even though this was a positive article, it's sort of one positive one in a pool of many not so positive ones. And the first thing I was greeted with on the day the article came out was a phone call from someone that I know to say, Is that a picture of you in the newspaper today with all those loony friends of yours? So that ridicule is still out there, even though it was a positive article. We're still seen as these mad women.
You just have to look at the comments to see what some people thought. It was like, oh, bless them. I'm like, excuse you.
I went straight to the comments in the Daily Mail, as I always do. But yeah, it's still that subject field that's a little bit out there for some people, especially some of the people who comment on Daily Mail.
Yeah, but one of the good things I noticed about the Daily Mail comments, if you look at the sort of thumbs up, thumbs down thing, all of those that were having negative comments or ridicule, or they were getting a lot more thumbs down than thumbs up. And the ones that were supporting it, saying, well, good on them, they need more people out there like this, it's going to do this, they were getting like stacks more thumbs up than thumbs down. So the tide is changing. I think people are still a bit wary of coming right out and saying it to their family and friends and people that they work with. They're thinking it, but they're not actually coming right out and doing anything about it. But as the subject changes and as Congress keeps marching on, it's becoming more and more acceptable.
Yeah, and I think the fact that they came out and said that UFOs are real, essentially, and UAPs, I think that's a big turning point. And you could, like my mum, I messaged my mum earlier and said that you guys were in the paper, and I sent her the link, and I will tell you what she said, because she's actually different to what I expected. She put, "I believe." Good for those women. Text me the website name for the group.
Excellent. We've one convert anyway.
There is something out there, she put.
I mean, we do it because we believe in it. Not because anyone's forcing us to do it. We're not, you know, having the males that are involved with it kind of say to us, you must say this and all the rest of it. As Ab said, it is completely 50-50 when it comes to that male-female split. We do it because we believe in it, we're interested in it, and we want to raise that voice. You know, no longer shall we be silent with it all. It's just sometimes it's hard to voice that opinion because you never know what kind of negativity that you'll get. I remember being at a family party a couple of years ago with a lot of very academic people, and somebody said, oh, this lady here, she's into all that loony UFO stuff and all that weird stuff that doesn't make sense, and it's all a load of baloney. And everyone sort of went, oh, yes, terrible. And actually, at the end of the party, one of the professors came over to me and said, can I have a word with you? But did it very, very hush-hush and said, actually, I believe 100% with what you've been talking about. I just don't feel I can say it. And that this was a man, you know, in this.
Yeah, rather than stand out from the crowd, they'll hate.
Yeah.
They don't want to be seen as being out on that limb.
There are those other people out there who do believe in what we're saying and do champion the cause, but they just feel they can't openly speak about it. Which is fair enough, each to their own. And, you know, not everyone can deal with the ridicule that comes with it, or the laugh and the joking around and the names that you get called. But that wouldn't be tolerated if we were dealing with anything else in 2022. You know, we're very much very open about a lot of things now in society, but for some reason this belief, if it was a religion of a different type, for example, I'm not saying it is a religion, but nobody would be allowed to say those negative things because there'd be a law against it. So why are we, who believe in UFOs and aliens and all the other stuff, treated with such disrespect? It's not on.
I think it's because a lot of people don't want to admit it. And one of the other problems that we've got is, if you watch all of the UFO programs that's on the telly, how many have female presenters? How many have female experts? It's all males. So they don't see it. And so it appears to be male-dominated. And in America, it certainly is, because none of the ones that's gone in and championing for anything are females. It's all Louis Elizondo. It's the only one female voice you hear really about is Linda Moulton Howe.
Interestingly enough, though, feedback from the C5 community has gone all the way to Dr. Greer himself, and the discussions within the C5 community have said that he has got himself a copy of that article and is very pleased with how positive it's been met. So that's only a good thing.
I mean, we were very careful. Both Holly and myself were very careful in what we said, but also making it clear that we are from different sides of the UFO topic, but we have a great deal of respect for the other. We don't rule anything out. It's just two different approaches to the same thing.
Yeah, and we work quite closely together, don't we?
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people belong to both sides, and there's not a right and a wrong side. As Ab says, it's just a different approach, but it's good that we work in conjunction with other groups around, not just the northwest of England where we're based, but, you know, the C5 community in the wider UK sense, and other UFO groups that we work with quite closely around the UK ourselves. So
I think it's done a lot for I think it's done a lot for that. It's like it's broken a barrier in some places between the CE5 and the researcher and investigators.
Yeah.
It's kind of broken that barrier a bit because they can see that we can function and work together and work closely together without actually separating from what the approach that we want to take.
There's a lot out there in the media that sort of purports that all of these different sort of factions of ufology are very much against each other and don't work in harmony together. But in fact, that's not true. That's just a media thing and part of the hype that goes along with it. But we very much do work as a cohesive group throughout, you know, the UK and the world.
I wanted to get a man's opinion on the women, as you know, there always has to be for some reason. But Steve's obviously been involved in ufology for some decades. So I wanted to sort of get.
My bones are old, my knees are weak. I was just going to cut in then, and you were saying about like Linda Moulton Howe being like, you know, one of the most famous females of recent times. But if you go back historically, one of the first women UFO researchers were Coral Lorenzen from APRO, and she sort of covered hell of a lot of one of the most famous cases that she covered was the Socorro one with Lonnie Zamora. And then over here in England, we had Jenny Randalls, who did hell of a lot, you know, in the late 60s through to the 80s and sort of died off a bit. Recent times, Linda Moulton Howe and Leslie Kane in the United States, the journalist, has done quite a bit as well. So when you look at the grand scheme of things, yeah, it has been male orientated. When I can only sort of pick out what I would class as four main female names.
And they're not getting put in front of the camera.
No, not at all. I mean, Leslie Kane, I mean, she's been on quite a few things recently because she was one of the people who helped bring the Nimitz stuff out you know, for people to see and worked alongside with the Two of the Stars, getting their stuff out there as well. But if you look back, like I say, about Coral Lorenzen, she was always in the background. It's like whenever you saw pictures and there's investigations, yes, she was very much in the background, but she was a real driving force for APRO at that time and really got them noticed. And, you know, people sat up and took notice of what she was saying. And so same over here with Jenny Randalls. I mean, she was at one time, I would say, what, early 80s, she was never off TV at one time. If anything happened in regards to the UFO field, she was straight on there. When Rendlesham Forest came out, she was out there with that. And yeah, it's odd. It really is odd because it is a subject that, you know, everybody's embracing nowadays. And there is a stigma attached to it, less now than it was in my younger days and probably was in the days of other people, because you had that whole thing with the contactee stigma as well. You know, everyone saying, oh, so some guy appeared in somebody's bedroom and, you know, if you hold this magic doorknob, you'll go and visit a UFO, and people thinking straight away, well, these guys are nutballs, so they don't want to get involved with the subject then, because you either have the scientific side to it, which some people think, well, I can't really look into that because I don't know anything about astrophysics, physics or anything like that, and then you get the strangest, I'd say, yeah, nutty side of it, which people tend not to try and buy into. I mean, thankfully that did start to die out at the end of the 50s into the 60s, but then you had all the cults then which came into it, and it just always seems to be something that, I don't know, it attaches itself to the UFO phenomena and people can dismiss it. I'm hoping now that, you know, because the Pentagon have come out and said, look, there's something there, we don't know what it is, but there's definitely something there, that people start thinking, well, you know what, there may be this sort of weird side to it, but we don't have to buy into that. We now know there is a scientific side to it that people are actually sitting up and taking notice of. And if we can, I mean, I've always tried to do it that my investigations have always been done from a scientific viewpoint, you know, whichever way you have to go through it, make sure that, you know, everything that it can be isn't, and, you know, whatever you're left with at the end, that's the way to go with it. But, you know, when you've got people who just sort of come in and say, oh, I've just seen a light in the sky near the airport. Oh, it's a UFO. Hang on a minute, I just said there's a light in the sky near the airport. Shouldn't we be looking at something? Oh, no, it's a UFO. And it's very easy for people to do that. And, you know, it's a lot of wish fulfillment as well. But I'm sincerely hoping that now it's, you know, it sort of breaks the back of it all. My only worry is that it's going to be, because the way that they're doing it now is that they want people to, you know, the military to start reporting all these things direct, which is a good thing. But there's less chance then that people leaking it out, because, you know, they at one time thought that was the only way that they could get this information out there, by leaking it. If they think now that this information is going somewhere and something else is being done with it, it could knock us back another 20, 30 years, because we're in that position again that we're not getting the information that we want. When you think of what happened allegedly at Roswell, when they said, like, oh, well, nothing happened. And then it was like, well, nothing happened, but it was a weather balloon. Oh, hang on a minute. It was a special weather balloon. Oh, hang on a minute. It was a certain weather balloon which actually had monkeys attached to it at one point. Oh, it wasn't that. It was a weather balloon which had figures what dropped from it. You know, and this was like 10 years later than the Roswell incident itself. But it gets to a point that then if the American Air Force would have turned around and said, you know what, you've got his hands down, it was a flying saucer from another planet, everyone would have gone, no, come on, seriously, what was it? And this is what we've got to try and avoid now.
That's sort of, it's a nice little segue into our next topic, what we're going to talk about. We've talked about Twitter, talked about women, and our event of the year, the UFO Identified Minicon, is coming up in just over 1 month's time on the 1st of October.
It's come around very quickly.
It has. And we even got our own bit of stick on social media about our lineup.
Really?
Which
we did.
Changed a few. I mean, the lineup changed about 4 or 5 times since we started planning it back in March, when we started planning this one. And then the lineup we had, which was like our second draft of a lineup, it was all male speakers, which is just how it turned out. And then we got comments on Twitter saying, oh, look, no women at all on this lineup. So I commented that originally we did have a female speaker. I had reached out to a number of women to give to be a part of the conference, which obviously no one was available or weren't interested, which just happens. You take sort of who wants to talk, who's available to talk on that day. It just happened to work out that the lineup at the time was four men. And then I pointed out that UFO Identified, there's four of us that run UFO Identified, me, Steve, Nat and Abby. So two of them are female. So I said that, so like, it's literally 50, we are 50-50 with two men, two women. And the main organisers are the women that sort of are better organising stuff. And
I'll remind you, you said that. Yeah. Note that, Steve, the better organisers.
No comment.
I even pointed out that Natalie will be emceeing the event, like introducing each guest, sort of organising everything on the day. And even then that got comments of the women are just enabling the men to give their talks. So it's like, what? I was like, I can't win. Like, we can't win.
Right. What was really ironic? No, but what was really ironic about it is the woman that was complaining that we weren't inclusive enough and there was no women had been asked and didn't acknowledge the request and didn't reply to the request. And she'd been contacted two or three times. And she was the one doing the complaining. So she's kind of taking a saw to the branch she was sitting on. I wasn't happy.
And actually UFO Identified, us as a group, are actually doing our own presentation, of which, as Ash has said, there are two men and two women. So us women are being represented. We'll be there, Abs, won't we?
Oh, yeah.
So talking of the Minicon, let's talk a little bit about the speakers and what they're going to be talking about. So first up, like you mentioned, that is us. We're all going to be sort of contributing to a talk on the day. And we're going to be talking about what, Steve?
UFO happenings along the M56 motorway and surrounding areas in Cheshire, which will incorporate little bits and bobs of stuff which has happened. The famous 1997 case, which was corroborated by other people. And there's a case that I sort of investigated, which actually happened on the same night with the same type of object in the same area. And if we've got time, a little bit about time travel, which has been involved in the area as well.
Nice.
Awesome.
So ours is all sort of local Northwest type events that we're going to talk about. And we're on first. We're in pole position.
Yeah, and talking about cases that we've investigated personally, which one, it's involved only a couple of months ago, which involved a possible UFO landing right here in northwest England only a couple of months ago. And we'll talk about that a little bit later.
I'm looking forward to that one.
The next speaker we have on the day will be Robbie Graham.
Cool.
And Robbie Graham has been a guest on this podcast.
He has indeed.
You may remember. Yeah, so Robbie Graham is going to be talking about the link between UFOs and high strangeness, which is something that me and Greg talk about quite a lot on the podcast, is how UFOs connect to ghosts, to cryptids, to other parts of the paranormal, and how it's all linked together. So I'm looking forward to hearing that presentation. And then after a little bit of a lunch break, we've got new for this year. This is something that we didn't do last year. This is new for this year, is our podcast panel.
Ooh.
Where we've got Andy McGrillan and Dan Zetterstrom from That UFO Podcast, joining Frank UFO Thinker, friend of the podcast, and regular guest with us. So they're going to be giving a panel talking about sort of latest developments in the USA, taking the question and answer from the audience as well. And there may be a little special addition to that panel. And I don't want to, I just can't confirm it just yet, sadly. But it could be very interesting and very, very sort of something that's happened very recently.
It's very top secret because we don't know about it.
Very, very, very top secret. And then rounding off the night will be someone very, very famous and popular, podcast host, TV show host, author, personality, Ryan Spragg, is our headline speaker, host of the Somewhere in the Skies podcast. He'll be making his very first UK conference presentation. which is quite a big coup for us to be able to have that.
He's moving to Scotland this weekend, I think, isn't he?
Yeah, he's moving to Scotland
today. This week.
And then he approached us and asked if he could give a speech at the conference, which of course...
Yeah, I did a little mini dance when I heard that.
I had a message from Ash going, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah, there's a lot of chatter about him coming, about all of them coming, really.
It's a great lineup. It is a great lineup. And do you think that the success from last year, because obviously it was a successful one last year, has allowed you to sort of progress with the type of guests you've got and the fact that people
definitely
come on to it? So Ryan Spragg's reaching out and saying that I would like to speak at your minicon. I think that speaks volumes anyway, doesn't it?
I don't just think it was the success of the last MoneyCon. I think that's also down in part to you guys and your podcast, getting us out there and getting the UFO stuff out there and getting your name out there more. I think that has a lot to do with it as well.
And we have been in the media a lot as well, not just this recent one, but Ash has been mentioned more times in Hatches and Dispatches this year than we've ever known. So I think a lot of that's come on the back of last year's conference. Everybody has talked about it since, about how great it was.
And I was approached for the documentary. So I went out and did a bit of filming for that. And it's two filmmakers from... They're originally British, but they're filming, they're working from Germany. So they were going across country talking to lots of people in the UFO community about why they do what they do, what they think of doing, what they think is out there. How do you feel about it? If there is something out there, how would you feel if it was proved there was nothing out there? How would you feel? And like going through a lot of that, it was really nicely done. So that's not out until next year. So I've been promised a good draft of that. So
cool. We've spoken to a few documentary makers, so to have somebody who starred in one as well. So you guys have obviously put a lot of work and effort into this MiniCon again this year. Have you got any other events? Are you looking forward to next year's already, or what? What are you guys up to?
Yeah, definitely. Because obviously last year we were in quite a unique position where all the other conferences have been cancelled. And with lockdown sort of ending, we saw an opportunity and we put it together in literally a space of a couple of months. We put it together and it went well. Because it's like the only one, pretty much, that's why it's popular. So this year, we didn't know how well it was going to go, because either side of us, there's conferences, some pretty local. There's some big conferences happening in Blackpool, couple in Blackpool, a couple in other places, Northwest and in Yorkshire. So we didn't know how popular it's going to be with competition, for lack of a better word. No, we're all friends, but obviously people can't afford to go to every conference,
that
sort of thing, too, which we wanted to go to. And then since we started selling tickets and we're pretty much sold out, it's just, again, we're blown away by the amount of people wanting to come. And I'm always getting messages, any tickets left? Or can I book a stall at your MiniCon and everything? It's just literally been blown away again by the amount of interest in it.
And the distance, some people are travelling for it. Some are coming up from London, and there's some researchers coming up. They want to talk to people about maybe doing a project up this way. And so it's opening a whole load of new doors.
We've got video bloggers coming, wanting to film parts of the day and speak to us and stuff. So, yeah, It's bigger than like last year. It costs a lot more, but thankfully we've been able to sell the tickets. So
yeah. I keep saying to the gang, next year it will be MegaCon, not MiniCon, and we'll be hiring out an arena somewhere, and we'll blow the lid off it all.
Or at least MediumCon rather than MiniCon.
That's not got the right ring to it, Greg, and you've got to think big.
Mega.
MegaCon. If the Americans can do it, why can't we?
Absolutely, absolutely. And you're in a bigger venue this year, aren't you? You're on a bigger venue this year. So the success is evident, and I see it when you're posting on social media that you've got, like, the early birds are sold out, the VIPs are sold out, I think, if I'm not mistaken. It's just normal sort of day tickets available.
I think we've got two left.
That's left. Wow. So hopefully by the time this goes out, they might have gone.
I'm sure they will.
Possibly, possibly. And you'll be there, Greg.
I will. Yeah.
You'll have your own little table to meet the listeners.
Apparently so. Yeah. Yes. Looking forward to that. I do like the sound of my own voice sometimes, so I'm looking forward to it. No, because I couldn't make it last year, so I'm definitely looking forward to coming up this year.
I'm looking forward to seeing some of the same faces from last year.
Yeah.
Like Frank from Frank's podcast and stuff.
Frank's brilliant.
Yeah.
So, Ash, you wanted to talk about the case that we've been looking into about the possible landing.
Yes. So, yeah, so this comes back to May this year. So only 3 months ago, we got an incident report sent to us. People can submit UFO reports on our website. We've had a lot recently. We would usually get 6 to 8 a month. This month, we're closer to 20 for August. There's been a real, real increase. Whether that's just people seeing more things, wanting to report it, whether that's our names out there a bit more. Maybe something when people search. So I did ask someone, actually, how did you find our site? And they said it just came up when they searched for UFO sighting. So maybe we are just being a bit more featured. So we've been a massive increase in the amount of reports submitted just to us this year. And we got one in May from Bolton, just north of Manchester in the UK. And this was the 12th of May, about 20 to 1 in the morning. And this witness described what she saw as a turquoise ball of light moving slowly. And then it came down into the trees near to her home. She was obviously quite interested. She was on the phone to a friend at the time, so she sort of hung up and said, like, right, I'm going to go see what this is. She went outside, bear in mind, it's 20 to 1 in the morning. It was a young female on her own in the middle of the night. And the area, let's just say, probably not one of the safest areas, best be out in at that time in the morning. But she said she felt drawn to going to find this object that came down into the woods. So she went out for a walk, then came across the woods where she said she thought this is about the area where it came down. And then she saw a light in the woods at ground level. So she gets her phone out, starts trying to record this light that she's found. It then sort of went off. So she came back home and reported the UFO sighting to us. So pretty interesting. We've got obviously light in the sky, middle of the night. She's gone out to try and find where the light's gone, which is something a lot of people don't do. They just see a light and that's it. And she's seen this light in the woods, moving around on the floor, or sort of ground level. And she's recorded it, so we've got video evidence. So we've got a light in the sky, we've got possible landing site, and we've got video evidence. So interesting enough, on its own. So I'm reading this report. So first thing I do is see if there's any other reports at the same time. Anyone else reported anything? So this one reported to us. So I looked on the MUFON website. No, it's the NUFORC website, the National UFO Reporting Centre's website. And at the exact same time, over in Liverpool, someone reported seeing a bright object moving in a downwards direction. It looked like it had a beam coming out of it as it sort of went towards the ground. Now, if you don't know sort of England, Bolton and Liverpool, they're not right next to each other, but they're not too far away. It's probably 20 miles between them. And the main thing was that he was at the exact same time. Unfortunately for this report, because it's made to a different website, I don't have any more details apart from sort of the time and what was seen. But obviously he saw it at the same time. So I've got to think this has got to be the same object. And if it can be seen in Bolton and it can be seen in Liverpool at the same time, then it's not going to be a helicopter or a drone because it won't be visible 20 miles
away. And it's going to be pretty high up.
I did reach out to Peter Davenport, who runs the NUFORC website, sort of saying, I've got a report the same day. I'd love to, if you can speak to the witness I reported to your site, if they don't mind, pass me the details so I can sort of interview that witness, but never heard anything back, sadly. But we had our report to go off, which involved a possible landing site. So then we started our investigation. Abs, do you want to take it from here?
I don't know how much you want to tell because we'll be really in this at the conference. So how much do we really want to tell? Are we going to do all of it?
A little bit. Just
a little bit. Okay, so we went out.
Headline stuff.
Right. Well, headline stuff. We went out. We met at the site, and we went a hike, and it was an interesting hike, almost deadly hike, and interesting. The part where she thinks that the object came down was really quite dangerous to get into. I mean, we went as far as we could. Yeah. But we took a few pictures, a few videos. I nearly got run over. I suppose that would be a highlight. Because Ash left his documents on top of his car when he drove away. And it flew off, hit my car, and this car's running over it, and I'm dodging traffic trying to retrieve it.
We are professional researchers, can I just note here? I know it sounds like we're not, but we are.
It was all retrieved. But it just shows you these things happen to everybody. Nothing is ever goes without a hitch. But we did, and we did. We come to what I think is a fair conclusion. I don't know whether you want to give that conclusion out or not, Ash.
Say the conclusion will be revealed at the conference.
Yes.
Yeah, the final conclusion will be revealed at the conference along with our evidence.
Yeah, so we interviewed the witness on camera. So he was happy to be on camera to give a name, so obviously we won't give her, but we'll keep her anonymous, but she was happy to be on camera. She was quite open with, I saw what I saw, I'm not gonna like pretend anything, I saw what I saw. She was drawn to this area of the woods. She saw this light in the woods that had come down, and she believes she saw something out of this world. It's safe to say she believed it to be intelligently controlled, and that she was drawn to find it in the woods. Obviously, we obviously do the sort of... The way we approach it is we rule out everything first. Even though I know it's not going to be a helicopter, I still contact the National Police Air Service, contact the airports, see if anyone was in the area. There wasn't any helicopters up in the area at the time, just to rule it out. So we can say 100% that wasn't a helicopter. It wasn't a drone.
We get on the standard trackers and make sure we know where everything is, where it's supposed to be, what's passing over, be it satellite or aircraft. We check everything, even down to the weather service to see if they have anything on the go.
Yeah, also the witness was very open with us, answered all our questions, no hesitation. Very genuine, very nice young lady.
So all will be revealed at MiniCon for those who are in attendance.
Yeah, the Bolton UFO landing.
And whoever's not in attendance, we'll do a follow-up on the podcast after the event just to... Just
close all the doors.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that... I know me and Ash had spoken about that. So, yeah, interesting case, especially when you've got the different points of evidence, as it were. Like you say, you've got the camera, you've got a witness.
Multiple independent witnesses.
Yeah. So that's
it bad. Has all the makings of a historic case.
Yes, it does. Yes, it does. Cool. So looking forward to hearing that when I come up to the conference. So where can people get the last remaining tickets from?
Natalie?
Yeah, as always, you can contact us on our social media platforms on Instagram and Facebook and Twitter. But the best place to get them is at the website at www.ufoidentified.co.uk. And
there is only a handful left, so be quick.
Amazing. I'm sure we've still got weeks to go that those remaining tickets will go for definite.
For sure.
Have you got any other bits coming up?
So we've got our normal sky watches planned. Unfortunately, the last few have been rained off due to weather, but hopefully now skies are getting a bit darker a bit earlier.
Yeah.
Before sort of like the rain and the cold comes in too much, we'll be able to have some more successes with that. I know the C5 group in the Northwest that we work with. I've got a couple of events sort of planned coming up. We actually have a what we call a rapid response group in that group as well. So sometimes if the weather is good and it's a clear night out there, you will literally just get dropped a text to say, we're going here tonight, can anyone come? And that's a real rapid response to go out and do some sky watches.
Awesome.
And we have regular events, regular meetups with UFO Identified at various places around the Northwest. So those will continue, and we shall be getting a date for next year's. Well, I don't know what kind of size con it'll be, but our conference for next year in 2023, I'm sure sort of by the end of the year, we'll have a date for that. So it's a busy few months coming up. And as Ash said, we've got loads more sightings and investigations that have come through the past few months. So we will be busy doing those as well.
And we are hoping to get like a Christmas gathering together, aren't we?
We are.
Nice one. Well, I wish you guys all the success on that. I can only imagine that following last year, it'll be all the feedback that I saw online of people saying it was great, and all the comments on the Facebook pages and that saying that it was a great day. I think it sounds like it's going to surpass that. So,
well, we have taken on board a lot of the feedback that we got from last year about public transport, that some couldn't get to stay for the entirety of it because of public transport, and some thought that, well, it was just a little bit too long, they thought, because it did go on till about 9 o'clock or something. A lot couldn't stay to the end simply because of transport and traffic. And so we have taken a lot of the feedback on board, and hopefully this time it'll be more to everybody's liking.
So what else do you want to talk about, guys? There's lots going on in the UFO community at the moment.
Yeah, Congress is really kicking it up, aren't they? They're really, really going for it. What do you all think of the rocket that they're sending up to the moon? I think it's bizarre.
The one that hasn't gone yet.
I think it's
the
bizarre.
One that hasn't gone yet, yeah.
That from 1969 to now, considering how much technology's advanced, the rocket's still the same.
And I was talking about it earlier, and the rockets look massive. But we went to Kennedy Space Center in 2018 and saw some of the rockets, like the used ones that are just there, the old ones. And they're not quite as big as you think they're going to be.
But they're exactly the same design. You think with technology being the way it is,
yeah,
it would have been same way technology. More advanced.
Yep.
And they're sending up a dummy with sensors, well, like an AI kind of thing, dummy with sensors to see how it will affect humans when they do send humans up. But what I found really, really interesting is there was a clip about it on the news this morning at ridiculous o'clock, because I was up early for what, there was still a 5 on the clock. And they were talking about this rocket going up and everything else. And the man that was speaking, he says, well, we have the accommodation and everything that we can set up to be able to build and stuff. And I was like, excuse me? You've just said you have the accommodation and the works up there to continue building. Like,
okay.
But I thought you were just going back. So I was like, I know where they say they're going to land is like almost to the dark side of the moon kind of thing. And I was like, was that a slip, or is he just not putting it across the way that he should have?
Interesting. Who was it? Just a news reporter?
No, it was a NASA guy talking about the rocket and how they were really excited and about what kind of future they've got planned for when they do send up a manned contingency. And they were going on about they've got the accommodation there and stuff. I was like, hang on a minute.
Of course, it's far easier to cover things up when there's not a human being present. Mm. It would be my sceptical side to that.
The other part of me from the sceptical side is when you've only got one source of reference for the information coming out, are we hearing the whole picture? I know we don't really do conspiracies on the podcast, but if they're having to send a dummy up to see what the effect is on this dummy, did they not learn anything 50 years ago? Surely space hasn't changed that much.
And that was one of my questions. I mean, it's like, well, this dummy, we are the sensors, will tell them exactly what effect all this would have. Well, couldn't you just ask Buzz? So I'm sure they got a full medical when they come back.
Maybe, yeah. Buzz doesn't know the answer though, Abs, if he didn't go. Just saying.
I've seen him punch somebody in the face over that.
Really?
Oh yeah.
There's a video clip of somebody saying to him that he didn't go to the moon. He just runs over and punches a guy in the face.
Fair enough.
So yeah, that's a whole hot topic, the old the moon landings. But I know that with the Artemis, they're looking that that will be like a moon base ready for the next step onto Mars. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of technology they use on the moon, because Bigelow, Robert Bigelow and his aerospace company, who are also the ones that won a contract to look into ATIP and ORSAP, right in the beginning.
Mr. Skinwalker Ranch himself.
Mr. Skinwalker Ranch owner himself. He, part of his space technology is effectively hotels in space and like pop-up tents, essentially. So I wonder if they're going to use that on the moon as a, like a low-cost building.
If I was going to the moon on my holidays, I'd want more than a pop-up tent. I want a five-star hotel.
Well, I don't know. You can get some classic pop-up tents that are like clear. You imagine the view.
So you keep telling me, Ab.
I'll get you in a tent, yeah.
But just on the note about the launches, there are I've been reading reports and seeing news clips about the fact that there are UAPs monitoring the launches when they happen.
I don't think it's going to be successful.
Why don't you think it'll be successful?
I don't know.
Will be interfered with?
Yeah, I think it's been tried before. And every time it's been tried, what did Elon Musk say? An unplanned disassembly. When his rocket exploded.
Yes. But weirdly, when that exploded, we were recording a podcast. And we were talking about the fact that they didn't want us. We were talking about the fact that we don't think that they will allow us, they being whoever, to go to Mars. And all of a sudden, on the news, as we were recording, an unplanned disassembly happened with the SpaceX, which is quite weird.
Now, Elon Musk is a lot of things, but I don't think he's a quitter. And I think he's going to be a little bit irked that NASA's getting up there before him. But I think it's...
If it gets up there.
I don't think it's going to be completely successful. I think there's going to be setbacks.
Cool. Well, thanks, guys, for coming on.
Thanks for having us there.
Always a pleasure to speak to you guys, even when we have technical issues. But, I wish you all well, and I look forward to seeing you all in October.
Thank you very much for having us.
Pursuit of the Paranormal with Ash and Greg.